Hey y'all, welcome to Trojan Talks OT. OT, OT, there's never much love when we go OT. Hey, this is a podcast about occupational therapy where we talk about all things fresh, new, hot in the field of OT from the perspective of occupational therapy students, practitioners, faculty, and friends of the University of Southern California. My name is Elena Rodriguez Garza, and I'm an occupational therapist currently in the OTD program at USC.
And my name is Alyssa Lee, and I graduated with my doctorate from USC in 2020.
I'll be your host this season, occasionally joined by Alyssa, my co-producer.
We are so excited to share this very first episode with you today. Elena had the opportunity to speak to Alyssa Concha Chavez, one of the founders of the podcast from way back in 2015. They spoke about their OT journeys, how they crossed paths, and the importance of community.
And without further ado, let's dust off these mics and get started. Well, first of all, I'm excited. We're here so you can hand off the torch to me. So where should we start? Should I let you introduce yourself first? I think that's a good place to start.
Sure.
My name is Alyssa Concha Chavez, and I am one of the founders of Trojans Talk OT, and now USC alum and an occupational therapist and consultant living in Arizona.
Woo woo, the OG, y'all.
Something like that.
Well, our backstory is kind of interesting. So I thought it would be a good idea for me to kind of tell a little bit of the backstory of how I found you, how we met. And it's interesting because it's kind of my entryway into OT too.
Yeah.
So I actually found occupational therapy through my old job. I used to help kids like look into next careers. And the suggestion for when I took the test of the same test we would give the kiddos over there was occupational therapy. So I started looking into it. And of course, I'm super into social media as a millennial. And I found the Trojan Talks OT podcast, where again, the OG was there. I was listening to you on the podcast and I just thought, let me reach out to her on LinkedIn. So I reached out to you. I was interested in applying to USC. And yeah, that's how we met. We chatted. And even further than that, we stayed connected. You kind of helped me a little bit with my resume, sprinkle some sauce on it and make it good for the application process. I appreciated how real you were with me too, what you liked, you know, what you would recommend to somebody going fresh into OT school. And lo and behold, I got in and here we are.
Yeah, I remember chatting with you about just your interests. And I remember doing all of the track changes on your application essays and sending that back. I don't know how many months later I got the email like, you know, thanks so much for your support. I wanted to let you know I got in. And then and then we just stayed connected, and slowly our lives have been sort of interwoven in a lot of other ways, like your interest and now involvement with Beth Piatak's lab, where I completed my residency as well. And then now the podcast.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say, is I feel like we've kind of like weaved in and out here and there through my USC experience. And it aligns a little bit with yours. But something I'd love to kind of just ask, what is your story? I know we're talking about the here and now, but what is like your OT story starting all the way back at USC?
Oh, well, my OT story starts pre-USC for sure. My first exposure to occupational therapy concepts and the OT world is actually as a kid. So my mom's youngest sister helped to raise me when I was an itty bitty baby. She moved in with my mom when my parents were completing college apart, and so they decided to try and make it work long distance while they finished their degrees, because they didn't want to extend and derail their degree paths and scholarships and whatever. So my aunt was like, you can't drop out of college, you need to finish, I'll just move in with you. She was 18 at the time, and my mom was like in her early 20s, you know, finishing up her undergrad. And so she moved in with my mom when I was like a newborn and stayed with me. So my aunt lived with my parents, like once my, you know, they ended up finally getting together, and having their own home together. And we stayed very interconnected. So once my aunt started OT school, she was doing all of her, like, assignments and PEDS projects on me.
I love it.
And then she went on to become a successful pediatric occupational therapist and entrepreneur that had her own OT clinic and contracts with schools. So I, every summer throughout high school, would go and spend like a month living with her in New Jersey. And she basically treated me the same way that you would treat like a level one fieldwork student. So I had a pretty good working knowledge of like pediatric OT concepts. When I graduated high school, I knew that I wanted to be an occupational therapist. And I think that it was definitely meant to be that I ended up getting a scholarship to an undergraduate university that did not have an occupational therapy bachelor's, because I would have, without a doubt, just like signed up for that. But it wasn't an option at the University of New Mexico, so I had to find something different. So I ended up settling on, and settle is probably not a good word, I found a really good community and fit in communication and journalism, specifically as an interpersonal communication major. And it's so funny that within the school of CNJ, there's, you know, all of the like reporter marketing type people that are more like PR and the traditional CNJ type crew. And then there's more the like interpersonal communication, health communication majors. And I fell firmly, and like my identity was in that camp. Like, I'm studying how people are communicating in their relationships, communicating with health providers. I don't see myself as like a reporter type. And then while I was in OT school, and then later even just in my involvement with professional associations, that was my whole, like, the reputation that I developed was, like, being the interviewer and the person that puts podcasts together and the person that, like, does the marketing for the state association.
oh, my gosh.
So it must have had a much bigger impact on who I became than I, like, realized at the time. But I really value that foundational knowledge and experience, and it definitely has shaped the clinician and the person that I've become now, for sure. And I would advocate it. You know, obviously, there are so many paths to an OT career. There's no one right way to do it. But I feel like interpersonal communication was a great foundation for me, at least. But yeah, so I was fortunate enough to like have, you know, a variety of shadowing opportunities throughout undergrad. And then what I did was I completed all of my major and minor requirements in 3.5 years so that I had my last semester where I could study abroad. And I chose to go to Argentina in Buenos Aires. And I went to an occupational therapy program in Buenos Aires. So my first OT classes were actually in Spanish.
I love that. But it's interesting. I had no idea about your the undergraduate background, like the actual journalism part, had come before the OT part, not because you didn't know about OT or you weren't into the idea of OT first, but because of the school that you went to. That kind of leads me to like how the story of the podcast began, how you joined the two, married the two, and what wanted you to create the podcast.
Well, the podcast was not my own creation. So I developed it with Rob Russo, who also had a fascinating background. I won't speak for him. If you have an opportunity to track him down, I highly encourage it. He's a really, really fun person to talk to and get to know. Yes. But it's definitely a team effort. And the podcast grew out of just a combined just excitement and curiosity and desire to share with like a broader community our excitement and joy around the profession and the discipline. And I was a huge podcast nerd. Like, I spent a lot of time listening to things like This American Life and Radiolab all through my undergrad time. So edutainment was something that I was very much drawn to and saw a lot of value in and really enjoyed. So the combination of Rob Russo's experience, he had previously like been a sports announcer for like bass fishing.
So fascinating. You have to be fascinating as a reporter. I'm sorry. No offense to anybody who does bass fishing, but you have to be a fascinating person to highlight that area.
I can't speak for Rob, but if you could get him talking about bass fishing, it's definitely exciting. But he and I had worked together also just as CAs and so we just already had like a lot of experience collaborating and developing stuff together. So we just jumped in and decided to approach Kim and pitch the idea of like, let's put something together. We just want to have some interviews with cool people and share stories. I think the other thing that really kickstarted it was the fact that USC and Chan has a long history of funding students and faculty to go to conferences and share, you know, knowledge and also bring back knowledge from the broader like national and international OT communities, which is amazing. So I was just interested in podcasting. So the first mic that we used for the podcast was one that I just paid for myself, that I bought personally and took with me to student conclave that I had applied for funding to attend. And so it was part of my vision to share the experience with my cohort and other students back at USC. So the first interviews for the podcast were more like, it was just, I was funded to go to Conclave. I liked the idea of interviewing. So I did it and then had content to bring back. And then, you know, our podcast kind of grew and was more formalized after that.
Right.
And it was really just, these are great sessions. And this was, you know, before all sessions were recorded and posted and available later. So I just took sort of some of the skills that I had picked up from listening to a lot of podcasts and just having done different types of focus groups and interviews, and we just put something together.
I love that. It's kind of like this unforeseen thing that came, like how I asked how the two were married. It wasn't even intentional. It was more so just something that kind of came out of like this collaboration, this relationship, and then also I want to share this information. But that was actually one of the first episodes that I had listened to, was the one from the conference, and it introduced me to OT. And what I loved about OT, what really brought me to the field, or one of the key things, was the broad scope of practice, in a sense. Like the fact that everybody participates in daily occupations, and that can look so different for so many populations. So when I was listening to the people that you were interviewing at the conference, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many ideas and so many ways that you can implement OT into the world.
Exactly. Yeah. The podcast was just an opportunity to explore and take people alongside our journey and sort of share that sort of exploration and learning with a sense of fun and joy and passion about just connecting with other people that have really important things to share.
Yes. No. Okay. That makes sense. And I love that. And I guess it's interesting just because I feel like that is going to translate exactly into what I'm planning to do for this next series. So like mini spoiler alert, we want to try to do each episode on a different practice area and kind of explore each of those practice areas and what is kind of like new, fresh in the research or practice. That is something new that we can learn about. So I like that. I'm liking learning this because it's going to translate as you quote unquote pass the torch over.
Yeah, that's really great. And I'm excited to see where you take it.
I'm curious to know too, because again, I'm learning so much about you and just your past. And I know, like you said, a few of the projects that you've done and how they've like interwoven with what I've done. But a specific question, aside from the podcast, what were two of your favorite projects that you worked on during OT school and why?
Well, not surprisingly, the two big ones are the ones that you probably know the most about already in terms of my history. So obviously, Real. So the lab with Beth Piatak and diabetes management and chronic disease management interventions generally is a huge passion of mine. And that's one that, again, I wasn't necessarily pursuing. It was just a good fit at the time when I was transitioning into my OTD residency year. And for me, my priority was to figure out how to provide OT services to Spanish-speaking communities. And the more that I was exposed to different population health needs, the more that I sort of became overwhelmed at just like the scope of just people having under-resourced and under just supported needs around their health and being able to navigate access to health, things like that. And I have a lot of interests, and if I were to try and like pursue all of them, I wouldn't get very far at all. There are so many things that I am very interested in working on that it would take a lot of intention and effort to specialize in each one, and I just needed to pick one. And so working in chronic disease self-management, or specifically diabetes, made sense because it is such a prevalent issue. So to me, it just seemed to be a bigger bang for the buck type of approach to the challenges that, you know, people are facing. So that made sense because, like, I just, you know, you can't take on everything.
Yeah.
And I really valued the experience of working on a research project in general that had a very strong team and was well run and well structured. But B, also being on a project that was a community-based intervention, being in a clinic setting or in a structured just team-based setting is very different than being in someone's home or meeting them at a library or at a coffee shop to try and address their healthcare needs. So it really helped me appreciate and understand a lot of basically people's daily lived experience around navigating their different social determinants of health. The second project that I really enjoyed and that stuck with me was my externship experience from the master's program, where I had an opportunity to observe, learn from, and contribute to Esperanza Community Housing's Promotores de Salud training program. And that those relationships with that team of people led to the work that I did with the Albert Schweitzer Fellowship, which was mostly around me providing motivational interviewing training to promotores de salud in different contexts.
Yes, I am loving hearing you talk about this just because it aligns exactly with the things that I've been passionate about at USC, which is, of course, the population, right? The community. And it's interesting to hear about your experiences and now thinking about mine, because a large part of my schooling was during COVID. And so on top of a lot of the barriers that you're talking about, or maybe not necessarily barriers. Well, yeah, I would say social determinants and barriers, even more, I think, came about during the pandemic. And so it was interesting because the real study that you're talking about, serving young adults and helping them with chronic disease self-management, specifically diabetes, we started that same study, but telehealth, delivering it via telehealth. So kind of addressing that in that sense.
Been a journey for sure. And I think that also highlights the things that has been a through line for both of us, which is a passion and interest for health equity. And yes. I think passion is a term that I've come to sort of like reflect on a lot more lately, because it's one that I use a lot, especially it's one that people always use in like their application essays or whatever. But I think especially when I was feeling very, very jaded after like, I don't know how many months into the pandemic or whatever, I was just sort of fed up and pissed off and just like angry at how equity feels so far right now away for certain groups and populations. And I think it was a job application that was one of the questions, like, please describe like your passion for behavioral health work or something like that. And I was like, I don't feel passionate about, like, I wouldn't. When I start talking about like passion for something, I think of like a musician has passion for the art they're creating. Like, that is not what I feel for this work. I feel like a deep, intense fire and like almost like a targeted and intentional anger that the only way I know how to cope through that is to find actionable things to work towards to improve the situation. And also there's a lot of mixed sort of there's this combination of duty and obligation. There are so few clinicians. I mean, let's talk broadly, not even specific to one discipline. Healthcare providers in general, we have a straight up shortage across the board, and the diversity within a healthcare workforce isn't what it needs to be to reflect the populations that we're serving. And then when you start talking about OT specifically, it's like, whew, we've got a lot of work to do. And so this is something that has connected me and a lot of other like colleagues and students that I have also mentored, I suppose, around these issues of how do we as OTs work towards health equity in whatever practice area that, you know, people choose to align in or are wanting to pursue. But all of that meandering to say that health equity is a huge focus, and I don't know that I think of it as a passion anymore so much as like a very intentional choice of how to sort of make an impact in my career and in my life. And it's almost, depending on the day and how I'm feeling, it's not just work that I'm pursuing. It's like almost a coping strategy, because it's like the only way that I can live with myself facing the huge inequities that our communities are facing. I mean, you could just
we could go all day about it.
Been around in your office chair and like wherever you happen to be facing at the end of that little spin, like you'll be pointing toward one community with one problem.
Literally, when you were explaining kind of your redefinition of passion, or maybe like making it more than just this passion, because it isn't just a passion. It's just, like you said, it's almost like this fiery feeling and frustration and duty and obligation. I was imagining, I don't know if you've seen the new emoji, it's like a heart, but like literally on fire. It's like that. And no, I feel every single thing that you're talking about. And when I was going to USC, of course, that was exactly what I put in my applications. And I was lucky enough to get a research assistantship. But we didn't know where we were going to be doing research, and we just go through an interview process and then they match us. And I was kind of worried, like, oh gosh, where am I going to end up? Not that it would determine my future, but it was going, in a sense, to determine how I would gain deeper knowledge about occupational therapy. And so the one thing I was like, okay, what do I want to make clear during my interview? I didn't know how to say it, but the way that I said it was like, I want to work with people that look like me. You know, like that was just the clearest way that I could put it. Like people in my community who I identify with and who I align with. And so I guess I made it as clear as possible. And then that's how I ended up at the same exact lab that you are working at too. And it has brought me exactly to where I'm at now, which is in the residency working at a county hospital it's a safety net hospital, low income, uninsured patients, older adults, Latina, mostly Spanish speaking, who have so many barriers, so many difficulties, like a rightful distrust for some healthcare practices, right? And it's super frustrating, but I feel exactly the way you did. It's like, to be truthful, I would not still be at USC for a third year if I didn't end up in that kind of a setting. And if I didn't end up working with that population, I only applied to two residencies for my third year. You know, I love the academic program. I'm glad I went, but that was the only way that I was going to stick, is if I ended up working again with the community that I wanted to, and helping with health equity. And I think that is one thing that I do enjoy about occupational therapy, is that if it's done right, in my opinion, it embraces you as the therapist to like embrace your identity and to use that as your power in your work, right? And with your patients and your, or whoever your population is. Well, in order to be respectful of your time, I guess I'll kind of wrap it up with a big theme that has come out of this is the importance of community. And not to be corny, but the importance of commune OT. So do you have any last words / parting advice for our commune OT listeners?
For a parting, I want something that's going to be impactful and big, but I think just keeping it simple. And my parting words would probably be like to really try and embrace and understand what communities you want to be a part of and that you feel fill your cup. I would encourage people to be intentional and craft that professional network community with people that they feel will see them, and be authentic and have like a reciprocal relationship I don't think that I've ever engaged in, like, quote-unquote mentoring conversations with any students that haven't also understood or felt that I'm, like, invested in learning from them as much as trying to share my experiences with them.
Yes, I will attest to that. I definitely feel like I feel seen when I talk to you. I feel like I'm able to see you more and see the work that you're doing. And I'm so happy that we connected. And thank you so much for your time, Alyssa. I'm happy to be continuing the work that you and Rob Russo started a while ago. And I can only hope that, you know, I've earned the honorary passing of the torch for Trojan Talks OT.
Yes, above and beyond. I'm so excited. Well, I look forward to hearing more, and I'm always here if you need ideas.
Of course. Thank you. Okay, honestly, that was so fun. First episode for Trojan Talks OT 2022. This is definitely one for the books or headphones.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe.
Wait a minute. Are we influencers now?
I think so.
Okay. In that case, you can find us on USC Chan's website, chan.usc.edu/media/podcast. And as for the next episode, catch us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Bye, Don.